What's good, y'all? My name is Dylan Green, and this is Real Notes, a space dedicated to blurring the cultural and artistic lines between rap and film. I'm here to chop it up with everyone from rappers and producers to journalists and video directors about their relationship to movies and how, if at all, film inspires their craft. My guest this week is New Jersey rapper, producer, and composer Will Brooks, lead MC of the group Dialect. We spoke about the work of John Singleton and Christopher Nolan, how we unknowingly attended the same screening of The Dark Knight Rises, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, longevity as an independent musician, what it means to be hip-hop, scoring the documentary Betrayal at Attica, and the creative process behind their latest album, Precipice. Come fuck with us. What's cracking? Welcome back. Welcome back to Real Notes. It's a beautiful day outside. And I'm watching a cat, like my girlfriend's cat is like trying to get out the house right now. There's like a big ass screen door up. So I'm just like watching the cat just try to like figure out a door. So it's like a good day to just kind of like watch innocence play out, you know, like innocence is a nice thing sometimes. my name is Dylan CinemaSci. I got a lot of names, do a lot of shit. And, I'm with somebody else who also does a lot of shit and gets a lot of things moving and shaking and has been for almost 25 years at this point. This man's a producer. He's a rapper. He's an orator and just kind of like a, I don't even know what other words to use to describe you, bro. Just like very, I would even go so far as to call you a leader. We have Will Brooks, otherwise known as MC Dialect of the prodigious Dialect, in the building today.
For having me.
Yo, man, thank you for coming. Like, yeah, you know, like I was telling you off camera, like just like being a Jersey kid and being into all of this really wonderful experimental shit that's happening in the rap space. Just kind of like seeing it kind of come full circle and knowing that you've been doing this forever and just like have kind of set crazy precedents for so many people is just so it's really an honor to have you on here. So thank you for taking the time. You know, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and thank you for having me, man. Yeah, it's bugged out to, you know, still be doing it and seeing so many heads take it to such a beautiful place now, man. It's just to be a part of it and to see the culture grow is a beautiful thing, man. Like I'm definitely humbled and, you know, honored to be part of this, man, for real.
And I'm like, yeah, no, that's incredible. And we're happy to have you here. And, you know, I'm happy, like, I'm excited to talk to you about movies in particular, because I like the thing I love about Dialect Project so much is that I can see everything you're saying, you know, like regardless of what it is, like I can see the sounds that you and everybody are making, just like there's a lot of visuals that play in my head when I see your shit. So I'm excited to see how and if that's really been a thing that you've kind of taken to heart while making your shit. So I'm gonna ask you the first question I ask everybody who comes on here, which is what was the last movie or TV show you watched that you had a strong opinion about?
The last one. Actually, I didn't finish watching it yet, but I was watching this documentary on Fong Torres, the writer for Rolling Stone. Just a flick I was checking on Netflix, but I'm just halfway through it, so it's hard to gauge that one. But I don't know, man. Like it seems like every other movie right now is a superhero movie, so I feel like I've been watching too many. You know what I mean? I don't know, those are fun, man, but it's like, you know, there's not much content really, you know what I mean? Like it's just, you know, exciting and eye candy. It's nice to watch. And I love comic books, man. So like, I ain't gonna front, like I do enjoy them, but I haven't been watching as many films as I should be. I need to watch that, the Macbeth joint that's on Apple TV.
Oh, that shit was tight. I like that a lot. Yeah.
I need to see that. But yeah, like it's been a minute since I've been, like watch like anything like new. I'm trying to think, man. I am big like on I've been binging a lot of series, man. I kind of started doing that during the pandemic, and it's, you know, a bad habit and hard to break. So I'm on the last season of of Snowfall. Like I watched like all the other ones like in a row, like a maniac.
And right.
Waited for this new one to come out, and I was a little hesitant to start watching again, man, because it like much like the show itself, like the show is like crack. You know what I mean? So like once I start watching it, I'm like, yo, I'm gonna be here for like for a straight week watching this. And I'd rather be working on music, so I try to limit myself, you know. But I do like that show a lot, man. I think Snowfall is dope.
I'm fucking with Snowfall too. I'm not very far in. Yeah, this is maybe like the third or fourth time we've talked about it in the maybe over the course of the last like month or so. But like I'm not as far in as I want to be, and I'm a big Singleton fan. I feel like a lot of people are. And that was, you know, like that was a big reason why I wanted to tap in with it. But just like, I love and appreciate shows that are willing to like really show problems at like a very core, small systemic root, and how that just like extends out to everything and everyone, you know. Yeah. just like there's like no individual you can blame for something like the crack up. Well, I mean like there are a handful of individuals you can blame for the crack epidemic, but like
you could also see how, you know, it goes down like to, you know, it gets like very micro as far as like, you know, this like immediate family and like the decisions that my man makes, and then it kind of, you know, goes outwards macro to like the whole CIA thing and all of that. Yeah, I hear you. It's really dope the way they did it, and especially like the early seasons, because like Singleton was so involved. It's so beautifully done, man. And just, you know, it's a shame that he passed so early, because
yeah,
like, I feel like he was just hitting his stride, man. It's like, it's crazy to say because his career is insane as it is. You know what I mean? Like, it's amazing, but to see like the trajectory and where he was going, like his storytelling was just so on point, man. Like visually and, you know, just like what was being said, like the content, it was just really, really dope.
Yeah, like you could just tell you could tell that Singleton was a real person. That's the thing I liked about a lot of his work. You could tell that he was like in the areas that he was making movies about, and like really involved with the people that he's telling stories for, and like knew people like that. You can like I can really tell. Sorry, what?
I'd say like outside of the film Colors, like Colors was probably like my first introduction to like the West Coast, like on film. You know what I mean? Yeah. Being from Jersey, I didn't know anything about what was going on out there.
Right.
But, you know, but like early Singleton work, I think like that's like my, like remembering from my childhood, that's all I knew about what LA was. You know what I mean? Like that's where I saw what was going on in Compton and stuff like that. Like that plus like NWA records, obviously, and Ice-T, you know what I mean?
For me it was stuff like a little later, but like I remember watching Boys in the Hood for the first time, and just like that, and like the 1-2 punch of that and like Menace, which of course isn't John Singleton, but like people like to compare them a lot.
It's the same era, like vibe, the whole feel. But yeah,
right, definitely. But yeah,
he did Higher Learning too, right?
He did do Higher Learning. Yeah,
I like that film. I know some people like don't like that, but I thought it was a dope film, man. I don't know. I feel like Busta Rhymes is amazing in that, man.
Oh, he's crazy in it.
So dope. Like the scenes with him in it, it's so dope, man. It's crazy.
Right. Like he's
so wild, man. It's the best. You know what I mean? Like he's just like out of control, and I love it. Like it's perfect. The perfect casting.
Right. Like bro is so effortlessly funny, you know, like even when he's like not trying to be, it's just like the whole fight scene is like, it's just like, I don't know. He's always been one of my favorite rapper actor transition people. Like he's like I'm kind of surprised he didn't do more of it, because he was like so good at it. And like he's definitely my favorite part, or one of my favorite parts of Higher Learning, because I like it, but I have issues with it. But it's still good. You know, it's not like it's a bad movie.
It's not a bad movie. I just, that one definitely didn't age as well as some of the others. You know what I mean?
Like, oh,
I
feel, yeah.
That was definitely of that era, you know, itself. And you kind of have to like view it that way. Like if you lose sight of that, then you're kind of like, eh, I don't know about this. You know what I mean? But like, you know, it's like that with some records too. Like you have to keep in mind like the era they were made. And you know what I mean? Like there's like a lot of variables involved, but yeah, but overall, man, I think like the whole, his whole film, like all the films he's made are just dope, man. You know what I mean? Like I really enjoyed them. And like, again, like that series is really ill. Another one would be, what was the other joint? Which I haven't, I've been staying away from the latest season just again, because of time constraints, but Atlanta has been one of my favorite shows for a minute, man. Like that, it's like that. I like the heaviness of it, but then like the lightheartedness of it too. You know what I mean? Like that juxtaposition and just showing that, you know, like I've been like trying to say that for a minute, man. Like, you know, the Black and Latino community, like we're more than just the tragedies. You know what I mean? Like there's more to that. And I feel like making sure that we capture that on film and in music too is important. You know, like I try to tell heads that too. Like even with my music, it's like, yeah, like my music may be dark. I try to, like, you know, there's like, there's always rays of hope in what I do. But I also feel like there's room in the world for, you know, for heavy, dark music as well as light, happy, joyful music too. Because I mean, you know, we run the gamut of all emotions, man. It's not, we're not one thing, you know?
Right. Absolutely. I'm so happy you brought that up so early, because that was one of the things I had written down, just about like your music is very hopeful, which I don't think people talk about enough, but right. I'm gonna save that tidbit for later, because, I love Atlanta too. I have, once again, a lot of mixed feelings about the new season. I don't know how much of it you've seen.
I haven't seen any, but I've heard some people kind of like, yeah, saying like the, you know, it may have jumped the shark or whatever, but I don't know. Like I'm still gonna watch it, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely. No, it's definitely worth watching. I just like the thing I love about the first two seasons is everything you just said. Like, you know, just like, you know, like Black and Latino people in particular, like our lives, it's so rare that you get to see just like banal shit, you know? Yeah. Like one of my favorite scenes in Atlanta is it's in season two when Paperboy's in the car and he's chilling with his drug dealer and then he just gets robbed. Like he buys the drugs and then he robs them, and just like the moment is played so straight and just like, so like there's no music in there. It's just like two people in a car and one of them gets robbed and then they got to walk home, you know, like just like real, like, and that happened type shit. And like, that's, I think like, you know, like you, I agree that that's, I think that's just as important as highlighting, you know, like really tragic stuff. And I love seeing that transposed on to rap, because like rap also doesn't really have very many like high profile television shows, especially none that like approach it the way that Atlanta does. So like just the first two seasons alone, I really, really appreciated that about that.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Man. So let's run it back even further with the movie shit for you. So like for you, what was the first movie experience you can remember having? Like it could be at the theater, your cousin house, wherever. Like,
I mean, I think, you know, like I think one of the early ones I remember was being like a kid and seeing, I remember seeing Empire Strikes Back in the theater. I know I was in the theater for Star Wars with my parents, but I don't remember that. You know what I mean? Like I was born in 75, man. So I was like, probably like what, like two or three when that came out. So I don't remember that, but I do remember going to the theater with my pops to see Empire Strikes Back. I mean, I'm an 80s kid, man. So like, you know, Star Wars was everything. You know what I mean? Like that and Return of the Jedi. I mean, that first trilogy was everything. Like when it came back, that was a little disappointing, but yeah, whatever. But right. Yeah, I mean, I think Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back was probably like my first memory. I know I was in the theater for a lot of those like early joints like E.T. and stuff like that, but I don't think I was really that into that movie, to be honest with you. I know I was, like, everyone was supposed to be, but I don't know, didn't really resonate.
It is, you know, it is what it is. Yeah, it's all right.
I do remember being in the theater. I mean, this is later, but I remember being in theater. Because I think about this every once in a while. I was in the theater watching Goodfellas, because I watched that movie all the time, and like to the point where my wife like hates that I watch, because it'll like I own it on DVD, you know, I have it on like in my Apple Movies account, like I bought it, you know what I mean? So I have multiple copies of it. I have like a DVD, I have a Blu-ray, but then if it's on like AMC or whatever, I could catch it in the middle and I'll just put it on and it'll just stay on. And my wife's like, why are you watching this again? I'm like, I don't know. I was like, I think that's like, but yeah, but I remember being in the theater for that, man. And Yeah, from like I mean those gangster movies from like from that era, just I don't know, like they just resonate, man. Like especially being from Jersey, you know what I mean, from this area, everybody knows a couple of Goodfellas, you know what I mean? So, or at least heads that pretended to be Goodfellas. I don't know.
Yeah, you know? a lot of fakers out there.
But yeah, man, like that movie's just dope, man. I don't know. I love that flick. Like I it's problematic as hell, but you know, whatever. That's the era we grew up in. But I was in the theater for Malcolm X, and I was in the theater for Do the Right Thing too. And those, I mean, I love those joints, man. I actually being in the theater for Malcolm X was like a marathon, man, because that movie is so fucking long.
Yeah.
But I do love that flick, man. Like Denzel's incredible in that. And seeing it like in the theater is a different experience than like seeing it at home, man. That was
right.
I feel like I still go to movies, but I tend to go more like, you know, I'm watching these blockbuster, like, you know, superhero flicks. It's different, man. Like back in the day, like the theater was like, that's where you went with your peoples. That's where you took a girl. You know what I mean? Like that was right. That was the spot. It was just like a different vibe back then. So I like a lot of the movies that would come out like that, you know, you would go see them if you were like, you know, if you really, you were hyped to see it. So like a lot of those movies that now I would probably, you know, either stream at home or wait for it to come on DVD or whatever, or streaming or whatever. Like back then you would wait to go to the theater to see it. It was just like a different experience. You know what I mean? But Malcolm X's Do the Right Thing, that seeing those in the theater, that was ill. That was really ill.
Right. I can only imagine. Like I was going to say, because like with Goodfellas, Malcolm X and Do the Right Thing, I've seen all three of those movies and I love them, but like they're not, those are movies that I wish that I could have seen in the theater. Cause like I'm still at a point in my life where like if I got time on a Tuesday and like $6 to go catch a movie at like the AMC or some shit, I'm gonna go do that. Like I love the experience of being at the movies. I love going to movies to the movies with my friends, with just like whoever, and just like
I still like going to the movies by myself, man. I feel like
same, yeah.
Like that's the better route, man, because you can concentrate on the flick. You know what I mean? Like it's I don't know. Sometimes it's built better just to you know, go on your own and peep something. But yeah, during the day, that's the shit. Like the older I get, the more I hate going to theaters. Like weekends is out, man, because I don't want to be around, especially now, I don't want to be around that many people. You know what I mean?
Like going to the movies during the week and just like by yourself is those are two completely, like seeing a movie by yourself at the theater versus seeing it with people is always a different experience. Like I just it's really something to just kind of like sit with your thoughts versus like bouncing them off other people's, which can, for me, sometimes get a little, it can make my mind a little cluttered. And like, I like it and I appreciate it, but I've been finding as I get older that I just kind of like, I like being able to sit with my thoughts after a movie sometimes, but you also want to be able to like, look at somebody and just be like, that shit was crazy, right? You know, like it's like that constant tug of war is what makes the like live theater experience such a beautiful thing. Like even with like even with like a Marvel movie, because I saw Doctor Strange, the new one, nice. Maybe a couple, yeah, I liked it. I thought it was really good. And just considering that they kind of leaned into it, had been a while since I'd seen a Marvel movie like really try to lean into something like weird and kind of sort of different, which is really just them like retrofitting the whole Sam Raimi like funhouse horror thing onto, like, I just think that's really fun and was a cool, interesting direction that I hadn't, you know, like, and there was like a lot of gore. I mean, like, I guess we could talk about it now, but like the scene where Scarlet Witch fucked up the whole Illuminati, like there's, we had never seen no shit like that in a Marvel movie before. So that was cool. Like
it was also kind of dope. They introduced like all these new characters that everyone was so excited to see. And they were in it for like 5 minutes before.
They got iced. Yeah, just so quick.
Oh, wow. It's Mr. Fantastic. Oh, he's dead. Like, damn.
She turned him into string cheese, bro. Oh, my God.
Ugly, very ugly.
Oh man, yeah. Like between I thought it was well done,
and I also, and like you said, I think like bringing in the whole like Evil Dead vibe was very cool. It was a different thing. You know what I mean, it was a different move. Like that was definitely cool.
Right.
I mean, like they, with a lot of those movies, it's like you can't. I kind of just let them play out, and you can't really think about it too much because there's a lot of like plot holes, and you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
And I feel like the whole like multiverse thing is cool, but at the same time, it basically just covers up any mistakes they'll ever make. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? It could just be like, oh, that's a different universe, right. whatever.
So like, yeah, just like yeah, just like in the books, you know, like it's like you can see the. Sorry to cut you off. The interesting thing about seeing Marvel kind of do those the movies now is just seeing them bring in all the pros and the cons they had from the books, like with like the retcons and the multiverse shit. Like just seeing that all play out on the screen is kind of funny to me. Just like a full circle.
I also think the undertaking that Marvel has been doing, like with all like with the larger arcs of the movies, it's pretty impressive, man. Because there's a lot of work that has to go into that to make it all make sense and make it work. And like the way it ties in with the Disney Plus shows and all that, like it's cool the way they're doing it. I mean, for a comic book fan, like you gotta be happy with what they're doing. I mean, like there's always critiques, but I mean overall they're entertaining as fuck. And I mean that's all it is, man. You know, that's what comic books are about, and that's what superhero movies should be about. You know.
Right. Yeah. It's just really impressive on that like curation and like connective scale. And yeah, they're all just entertaining. You know, like I've been watching these movies since I was, because when did the first Iron Man come out? That was 2008. So yeah. I was about 16. You know, like I've been watching these things for almost half my life. Right. And they're tight to me still. Like obviously, like there's a hierarchy and some are better than others, but like I was still, you know, like it's been what, almost 20 years, and I was like excited to go see Doctor Strange, you know, and like and like I will be excited to go see what's the next one, Thor, you know, like I'm in line, fuck it.
They got our money, you know what I mean, like I'll keep watching, I don't care. But the only series of superhero movies that I may have liked more just because it was such a different take was the Christopher Nolan Batman joints.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm a huge Christopher Nolan fan to begin with. Like Memento is like probably like one of my favorite movies, man. Like
Memento's incredible.
I saw that in the theater and I was just blown away, man. Like that movie like really fucked my head up. I was just like, yo, like what am I watching? I got a shout out because like the little bit of knowledge that I do have of like real cinema comes like from my brother Birbal Kakini and Cara Longo. Those are two very close friends of mine that we used to go out to like to, you know, to the theaters in New York, like the small like art houses, and like they would put me on like, you know, like a lot of like stuff that I never knew anything about, man. And like they would really, you know, really schooled me, man, on a lot of things about film, like Seven Samurai and, you know, like
yeah,
all that, like, you know what I mean, like Knife in the Water, I remember seeing in the theater, like, you know, like a lot of like real, like, you know, heavy like art film kind of thing, you know, like important films. And like Kara put me onto Memento, and I remember seeing that and I was just like, yo, like I was in love, man. I was like, this is crazy. So when he did the Batman joints, it's like it has like that same, like that weird darkness, that noir thing, but like his own, it's like his own universe that he creates, man, in a lot of his films. And like that definitely resonated with me, man. That was really, really well done.
Yeah, I feel you. My only thing is, I think The Dark Knight is one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life. But having gone back and rewatched the first one and the third one, because, okay, quick story. So I saw when The Dark Knight Rises came out in 2012, me and my homie Steve, shout out to Steve if you're listening, we went to go see, they did like the whole trilogy in IMAX. So like,
my wife did that at in Clifton, the Clifton Comic.
Oh shit, we did too. That's crazy.
Midnight showing, like we were at that, man.
Wow.
Yeah,
we might have been there together. That's so crazy.
Word up, yeah. And that was crazy because the next day was all that madness that happened in Denver, which we didn't find out until we got home from the whole thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? When that kid went in and shot people up or whatever. But
right, right.
Yeah, but that whole thing. I think I might have got rid of it, but they were giving out like a free poster.
Uh-huh.
I think I had it. I still had it somewhere, man. But I was like, where am I going to put up a Batman poster in my house?
It's gathering dust in the corner in my room right now. That shit is so funny. But like, so, okay, so you remember this. So we watched Batman Begins, and then The Dark Knight happened. And then everyone was hyped for the third one after The Dark Knight was over. And then after, like, the energy just fell after The Dark Knight Rises came on. And like, I thought about it and I was like, that like wasn't, I didn't really know if it was worth it. I don't know. Like I wasn't huge on the third one.
I dug it, man. Like, I don't know. I liked it. I mean, like, seeing three movies in a row is a bit extreme, though. You know what I mean?
True.
Like,
I
feel like I don't care like how dope the third movie is. Like, after sitting through like two, and they're not just like, you know, hour and a half movies, man. You know what I mean? Like, talking like 2 hours plus each.
Yeah.
So by the time you went to the third one, man, like you a little punch drunk. You know what I mean? Like, so I think it might have, like, I'm sure it was a good money grab for him, but I think it was probably like, that would probably be better to watch it, like, watch the other two at your leisure and then watch the third one on its own. You know what I mean? I feel like it probably would have been a better turnout, or a better effect rather. But,
and you know what's crazy? Like to its credit, I never peeped the movie by itself after. I saw it that one time and was like, I don't need to watch this again. So maybe I gotta do that again.
Yeah, I don't think I've gone back to watch the third one. I think I just watched it those three that last time, and that was it. And I don't think I watched. But I feel like that's kind of, and maybe I should watch it again too, because I feel like his films usually like deserve more than one watch. You know what I mean? Because I feel like Memento that way. Like, a lot of his films are that way. I think his first film, Following, that one too. You know what I mean? Like, it's like watching it more than once definitely shows you. Like, you see more things, and like, you notice more things. So it'd be interesting to see that one again, man. But I don't know. I'm just like with music, man. The problem with film is, like, you know, all these things, they require time, and time is so precious, man. So, like, to me, it's like, do I go back and watch this again, or do I, you know, watch something that I haven't seen yet, or do I go back and watch Goodfellas for the 3,000th time?
The eternal struggle. The eternal struggle. And yeah, I'm happy you brought that up about all, because yeah, like, all of Nolan's movies are stuff that really, like, everything is just kind of a thing that, like, expands, and you just, like, learn more about it, especially a movie like, I think, like, Memento and The Prestige, which I think is my favorite of his movies, are like,
so dope, man. That movie, man, like, that was another one where, like, it's like his endings are just like, what? You know what I mean? Like, you're like, what is happening here?
Yeah.
Man. Yeah, and I'm a huge, like, Nikola Tesla fan, so, like, the fact that in the movie, and the fact that it's David Bowie, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, come on, man, like, it just wins on every level for me, man. Like, that
yeah, movie, no. That shit is loose, bro. I really love, and like I love how the three act structure goes into the three act structure of the magic trick, and just like, that's like, to me, like, not all of Nolan's movies hit for me like that, but that's one where like everything was like, that's like a perfect movie to me. That and Memento are perfect movies to me. Just like, they're like, they get it exactly what they're trying to do. Like that, like the, it's like, it flawlessly executes the idea that it sets out to do. You know, like, it's just
the one that he has, was it Blindness, with, is that the name of it? There's one of them that he did with Pacino that I wasn't really feeling. It's like, he's up there's something, he's like, I forget the name, not Blindness, I forget the name of it, but it was that, like, I was just saying, like, as a counterpoint, like, that, yeah, like, that's one of the films where it's like, I could see what he was trying, but I just never really felt the flick itself. I was just kind of like, yeah, it's all right.
Insomnia, that's the one. Yeah,
yeah, that one was kind of like, eh, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree
about that one. But I mean, but overall, I mean, like, his, like, you look at, like, his body of work overall is pretty amazing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
amazing stuff. But
yeah, the only one I wasn't fucking with really was, or not the only one. There's a couple, but the other, but like the most recent one, I wasn't really feeling Tenet too much. I thought that was kind of a misfire in a few ways.
We saw that in the theater. My brother-in-law's friend, during the pandemic, after, like, people had been vaccinated, it was like, you know, theaters were struggling, so he ended up, like, renting out the theater to watch Tenet for just like a bunch of, like, a group of friends. It ended up being like maybe like, I don't know, like 15 of us, something like that, and we had the entire theater to ourselves, which kind of, I was like, man, this is kind of spoiling me. Like, I feel like this is the only way I want to watch movies now. You know what I mean? Because like, basically, like, sit wherever we wanted, and it was like no one else in the theater other than people we knew, which was kind of. But I remember watching that movie, and it was out on Long Island, and me and my wife showed up like a couple minutes late, so we walked in as the movie was already happening, which is that movie's already, like, you know, like, you even if you, like, the thing is, like, we walked in and we were like, oh, like, I'm kind of lost, and my brother-in-law was like, yeah, it wouldn't have mattered if you got here on time. He's like, oh,
yeah.
Happening, like, this movie is wild. He's like, I don't, like, no one knows what is what So like, we just kind of sat there and watched. Yeah, it was, I mean, that's another one. Like I seen it once, like we kind of laughed about how we had no idea what anything was about. And then I, you know, it's on HBO Max or whatever, but I never even bothered like watching it again. I was like, I can't, my head hurt too much after.
Yeah. I felt the same, and like the time travel effect is kind of cool, but it just didn't really, like a critic I really like described it as like somebody wrote like a parody of a Christopher Nolan movie and then took out all the jokes, you know, like that's kind of like how it plays out a little bit, especially because like John David Washington's character is his only name is the protagonist, like it's almost like he's taking the piss out of himself a little bit, and I just kind of wish he leaned into it a little more instead of he takes himself very seriously, which is both a strength and a weakness in my opinion. But like, you know, but before we move on, I want to touch a little bit more on Memento for you, because that seems like a movie that really had like an impact. So like, talk to me a little bit about like watching Memento and like what about the film in particular really sticks with you.
Just the way that I don't know, again, like, you know, it's like the way you really don't know what's happening, but the protagonist doesn't know what's happening either, you know what I mean? It's like you're like discovering what he's going through as he's discovering it, and just the idea of memory itself is something that I find like really interesting, and just the way the human mind works, the way he captured that on film just really resonated. I don't know, like there was something really beautiful about that. You know, it's funny, like I just made the connection right now. Like I was thinking about another movie I really like, and it kind of plays on some of the same things as Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Hey,
and like that is like another film that I really, really love, man. Not just for you know, that whole like, you know, erasing memories and all of that, you know what I mean, like the psychological thing, aspects of all that, but also like the use of music in that movie is just like, John Bryan is a genius, man. Like
for
that
real.
That score is like one of the most gorgeous things I've ever heard in my life. Like I was blown away on multiple levels watching that flick.
Yeah, man. Yeah, like that's a great connection to make between those two movies first and foremost. But yeah, like Eternal Sunshine, I feel like is a movie that like, you know, like that's a movie that I think no matter your age, like everybody was like, everybody who saw that movie, that was a head bust for every single person, whether you're old, young, teenager, you're in your 50s. Like I imagine like if my dad, he's like, my dad is 77. And if he watched that movie, he'd probably be like, wow, you know, like that's like, I can't think of very many movies that like exist in that like space, kind of sort of outside the mainstream, that like everybody would really pull something from. And Eternal Sunshine is, I was just talking to my homie Kemba about this on the podcast last week, like that's how you know, like that's like, you know, like it's
I didn't watch your podcast, man. I swear, I just
no, I feel
I got that really is like one of my favorite movies. But yeah, but you know, I think what it is just I mean, who doesn't have, you know, like that relationship that ended in heartbreak, you know what I mean? Like everyone goes through it. So yeah, it's like that concept of erasing that pain is like such a tempting prospect. You know what I mean? But I think that, you know, the what you had, like I you know, and maybe like that's one of the lessons of the movie, is like the pain is what makes you who you are. You know what I mean? Like getting through the pain and like getting through those tough times and tough relationships, like that's what, you know, that all the ugliness makes the beauty, you know what I mean? And yeah. I think that's like, at least that's what I take away from that film. But I think that's like the fact that that's such a universal human experience. I feel like, you know, that resonates with anyone, regardless, like you said, of age group, of gender, of anything, you know what I mean? Like it's yeah, like that's something that's common to all of us, you know?
Yeah, but absolutely.
Like that and like the way that music is used, the repetition of melody, the way the melodies get distorted, muffled, like, you know, kind of mangled, that's memory, you know what I mean? Like that, there's a I can't remember the name, there's like this project that my homegirl Mars Kumari put me on. It's like this, I want to say it's something like 20 hours of like this one melody that keeps devolving. And man, I wish I remembered the name of it. Like, she put me onto it and I was blown away. I can't remember the name of the artist right now. I could look it up and get it to you at some point, but it's like a similar thing, like where it's like, it starts like with this, like almost like 1920s vibe, really sad, like melody, but it keeps like being played back and resampled in different ways. And like, but I'm talking like, this is like a good, like, you know, whatever it is, 16, 20 hours that this goes on. I don't know. I never sat through the whole thing, but I actually fell asleep to it and woke up at like 4 a.m. and it was still on, but it was like all like broken apart and like, you know, mangled. And I was just like, it was kind of a perfect thing to fall asleep to, because when I woke up, I was completely disorientated, didn't know like what the fuck was going on. And I think that's the premise of the piece. And the pieces are supposed to be about like dementia and memory loss and that kind of thing. And it's heartbreaking to hear it, because it's, you know, the way it's supposed to be like the person who remembers this song, like hears it as his or her mind deteriorates, is heartbreaking. You know what I mean? But it's such a powerful piece. And I feel like it, you know, that there's that scene in Eternal Sunshine that kind of has that vibe to it, like where as the memories are being erased, like you hear the same music, but it's all distorted and mangled. You know what I mean? And like, you know, when the faces start disappearing and all that, it's like,
right,
so well done, man. It's really powerful.
Yeah, for real. I know the project you're talking. I know the song you're talking about, but I don't remember what it's called either. I feel bad, because I read an article that referenced it. I wish I could remember the name, but yeah, no, like that's like, you know, stuff that really gets at, because it's like, you know, like memory, not to dwell on this too long, but like memory is one of those things that feels really easy to like visualize. But at the same time, like there's so many different ways you could go about like showing how like what a good memory is, what a bad memory is, what a faded memory is. And just like you could go so many different directions with it. And like just to see them do that and to see John Bryan really like lean into that with this, just like really just. Just you said it, man. Powerful. Like that's such a powerful thing they did with that movie. Oh, I love
that song by Beck that's in there too. That's like one of my favorite Beck songs, man. So good. Right. That, I mean, that and the Sea Change album. But I think that was about the same era. But like that, so good, man. Like his like kind of like lo-fi, just him and acoustic guitar, really sad stuff. Like I mean, I'm a sucker for that stuff, man. It's, I love it.
You
know, speaking on the memory thing, you know, because, you know, having this new album out, and I've been, you know, having done this for like 25 years, I just recently did an interview like where, you know, people ask me about, you know, stuff, you know, albums that came out like in like 98, you know what I mean? And like, I'm like, I to the best of my recollection, I try to tell them like what I remember, but it's like my own memories aren't perfect. You know what I mean? It's like, and that's the thing about memory. It's like, Bandcamp just did like a, it was kind of like a guide to dialect, like where they kind of went through every release and like asked me about it, about every release.
That was a cool piece.
Really dope. And the writer, like, you know, I spent like a good, not even lying, like I spent like a good like 4 hours like talking to him. You know what I mean? Just about like all the records. And it got to a point where he was asking me I think Abandoned Language, he was like, was Mike Manteca there playing guitar? And I started thinking about it, and I'm like, yeah. And he's like, you sure? And I'm like, I think so. I was like, in my mind, I see him there in the studio. And then I went back and I contacted my boy Octopus, like the my original co-producer. And I was like, OB, I was like, was Mike in the studio with us when we did Abandoned Language? And he was like, nah. And I was like, yo, for real? I was like, in my mind, he was there. And he was like, nah, man. He's like, he was there on the next one. And I was like, damn, I'm like, yo, that's crazy. So I had to call the dude and be like, yeah, I was wrong, man. I was like, my boy wasn't there. And that's the thing about memory, man. Like, even like with your best intentions, sometimes, you know, you remember things a different way than they actually happen. It's not like you're trying to mislead people. It's just the mind is crazy like that, man. It's like, you know, like it'll just like place it, in my mind, like he was there and I can see it, but apparently that wasn't the way it actually was. You know what I mean? So I think, you know, like that kind of thing just really fascinates me, man. So I think, like, you know, like movies like Eternal Sunshine and Memento, just, you know, they capture that experience so well, you know.
Definitely. I almost feel bad asking you this next question, considering that crazy answer. But when did you first fall in love with music, and who were some of your influences coming up, if you can remember?
Oh no, yeah, no, that's the funny thing is, like, certain stuff doesn't change and like is just embedded. So like, yeah, I mean, like, I started like my cousins were DJs when I was coming up. So like they're from Passaic. And I was like the little kid that would hang out with them. So I was like lucky, man. Like I got to listen to hip hop as hip hop was coming up. Like, you know what I mean? As I was growing up, hip hop was growing up. So I was like, they were spinning stuff like Treacherous Three, like, you know, Grandmaster Flash, Furious Five, you know what I mean? Like all that era. I got into like Run DMC early, of course. You know what I mean? Like, I think like everyone like my age was into that. But I mean, and I was in love with all of that. Don't get it twisted. But I would say when I fell in love, when I was just like, yo, like, this is what I want to do type shit, was Boogie Down Productions, Criminal Minded. Like, my cousin played me that. And actually, the original, the first time I heard it was on cassette, and we were in his car. And it was crazy. We went to Eddie Murphy Raw at Brendan Byrne Arena. And I was like 12 years old, man. I shouldn't have been going to Eddie Murphy, but whatever. Like my parents are immigrants from Honduras, man. Like they were just like, whatever. Like they didn't know who Eddie Murphy was. So they was like, yeah, go ahead, go with your cousin. So my cousin's older. He takes us and he plays me Criminal Minded in the parking lot. And I was just like, yo, I had never heard anything like that before in my life. And I think that when the next album, By All Means Necessary, came out, that just solidified like KRS to me is the like ultimate illest MC, man. And like what he was doing on those albums, Edutainment, The Blueprint. I mean, like all those, like that whole run really was like foundational for like what I wanted to be. You know what I mean? Like I studied those albums, man. And that right. Public Enemy, Rakim, like that era right there is like where I came up and, you know, really, really fell in love with hip hop, man. Like all of that, man, like De La Soul, EPMD, you know, Big Daddy Kane, like this. I mean, this, it's hard, man, because like, I can't really pinpoint, like I could pinpoint it down to like Boogie Down Productions, but there's so many groups that I loved in that, you know, that's all I did, man, was listen to music back then. And I started DJing probably like at 30, like right when I turned 13, I was DJing, going to the record shop, you know, picking up everything that was coming out. And it was crazy, like when I think about that era, because it was like 88, 89, 87, like that, those 3 years, so many amazing albums were coming out like back to back to back. Like it's like when you look back on like the history of hip hop, like those 3 years, so much good music came out. And it was just like a constant, like just constant classics coming out. You know what I mean? Like not that I knew they were classics then, but I just knew it was great music and I knew that I loved everything about it. You know? But yeah, I think that's really like from the hip hop side of things, that's like where that came in. And again, my cousins being DJs and me becoming a DJ, you also just dig through crates and you listen to everything, man. So, you know, I was listening, you know, salsa, just like, you know, coming from a Latin family, listen to a lot of salsa, a lot of Hector Lavoe, Willie Colon. I had a cousin who was into metal. So like, I was also listening to like metal from his side. So he was showing me like Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, Iron Maiden, Slayer, like, you know, all that, like, you know, like that stuff too. So it was like, I was kind of getting like this musical education from like two sides of the family that were into completely vastly different things that ended up being so integral to what I do. And then also being born in the 80s, man, MTV, like all the pop stuff, you know, Michael Jackson, you know, like all the videos, like I was like, you know, MTV was like, whenever I could watch that was the move, man. Cause we didn't always have cable, but you know what I mean? I had friends who had cable. So when I could watch MTV, I was watching it. And then when we got cable, I was watching that all the time, man. But yeah, I mean, like, that's kind of like, you know, Tom Petty and stuff like that, that I love now. Like that kind of came from that era of like watching MTV and just being into all these like, you know, pop groups and things that I wasn't necessarily exposed to, but I just, you know, everyone was exposed to it at that point when you were watching, you know, like the videos and stuff. So,
right. Just shit that you absorb through osmosis. Right. Like just
stuff like Madonna and all that, you know what I mean? It's like, you can't escape that. Anyone that tries to be like, oh yeah, I wasn't into that, they're full of shit, man. Cause it's like, yo, if you, if you were born in that era and you had a TV or you walked by a TV, you heard all this stuff, man. You know what I mean?
Right.
And on top of that, on the radio too. But
right, yeah, you know. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, also like DJing, you know, got into a lot of like house music, club music, especially being from Jersey. There was a lot of like a Latin freestyle. So yeah, I've always had like just varied, eclectic taste in music. Like genre never really meant much to me. It was just always like, if it sounds good, cool. Right. And then, you know, the dialect sound really evolved more when I met Octopus and Josh Booth in college, and they introduced me to like my buddy Valentine and, you know, the whole shoegaze thing. Josh was in a band called Natural Emmeline Flavors that I was a huge fan of. And yeah, you know, like that whole side of thing of music kind of like spoke to me and really changed everything at that point. You know what I mean? Just kind of the melding of what I loved about underground hip hop plus noise just made sense to me and just like just rang true to me. And yeah, that's, you know, that's basically how we created what, you know, the sound we created. It wasn't like, you know, people want like a perfect story, but it isn't like the movies, you know what I mean? Like there isn't always like a perfect narrative. It's like, it's actually pretty boring, man. It was just me and Octopus like listening to music, drinking 40s and talking and, you know, building off of like, you know, what we each liked and just being like, yeah, like let's combine that and see what we could come up with, trial and error. And then you come up with something and you're like, oh yeah, that sounds good. And it's not like, again, like I always tell people, it's like, just because I create this music doesn't mean I want all music to sound like this. This is just my way of doing hip hop. You know what I mean? Like, and to me, I come from that era where the worst thing you could be was a biter. So to me, I was just trying to find my own voice and trying to do this my own way. Like, it's like, I love KRS. I love Public Enemy. I love My Bloody Valentine. Like, I want to combine all this stuff, but I also want to find my own voice through that and not just like regurgitate what's already out there. You know what I mean? So like that was really like our, like what we wanted to accomplish, which, you know, again, when we started like the first album, it's perfect for what it was at that time. It captures who we were at that time. But just like people, man, like our sound and our music evolved, and it's, you know, it over the years, it captures who we were and like how we grew. Like I wouldn't expect like my current album to sound anything like an album that I wrote when I was 20 something. You know what I mean? Like that doesn't,
right.
It's like, I'm 46 years old. Like I would hope that I'm a different person than I was when I was 20 something. Otherwise, like what's the point if you're not growing? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. Like, I think, that was, yeah, like you said, a mouthful, and really, it really just like hit on so many things. And like the thing that really sticks out is that, you know, like especially being from Jersey, I feel like Jersey in general, there's like a lot of different kinds of music just like around you at all times. And one thing that I've always loved about dialect is how you've taken all these different sounds and influences, but like you're still hip hop, and you've never really like and like not even in the sense that it's like, oh, it's like a guy rapping over beats that sound kind of like distorted. It's like y'all really take it as like an ethos. It's like hip hop as a verb, and not as like a, yeah.
I think people lose sight of, you know, hip hop is a culture, and hip hop, that's my culture. That's what I grew up in. That's what runs through my veins. It doesn't, I've said it before. I was like, yo, it doesn't matter if I pick up a banjo and start playing, it's still going to be hip hop, because that's just who I am. You know what I mean? Like rap is the music, you know what I mean? But hip hop is our culture. And
right. That,
you know, it's everything from how you speak, how you dress, like how you think, you know what I mean? Like all of that, how you talk, you know, it's the breakdancing, it's the graffiti, it's the, you know what I mean? Like it's the rhyming, the beat making, the DJing, it's all of that. You know what I mean? But it's more than just the music. And I think sometimes people lose sight of that, man. Like I doing a lot of interviews, and you know, we tend to play more in Europe. So I do a lot of European interviews, and sometimes the questions are a little, I don't know if it's like a language barrier thing, but sometimes I get questions where I'm like the question pisses me off. And I'm just like, I'm like, dude, like, you know, someone was like trying to tell me like, oh, like, how do you feel now that hip hop is only looked at in the terms of trap and of trap music. And I was like, I don't know where you from, but I was like, that isn't real. I was like, if you're only listening to like mainstream stuff, then I guess maybe if you listen to like to pop music, I'm like, but hip hop is a culture, man. I was like, and there's, I rattled off a list of like at least like a good like 50 MCs and artists that I love and respect, just to kind of prove the point of, it's like, yo, like all of like the, our culture is varied and vast, and all of it is still here and all of it is still growing. It's just a matter of looking for it. If you're not looking and you're not listening, then yeah, like you're going to assume that everything is like top 40 pop music. But, and that all of that is part of our culture, but it's not all of our culture. You know what I mean? Right. Like there's more to it than that. But that, I mean, like that's, you know, that's what we will always be hip hop, because that is my culture. So it's like, yeah, our music is wild, you know, it's experimental, it's, you know, left field, but at the core of it, it's still that, you know, hip hop that I grew up with, man.
Right. Absolutely. Nah, like that's something I try to impart to people all the time, especially with just like the glut of different and just like really interesting left field stuff happening in the quote unquote underground, whatever the fuck that means right now, you know, like, but like
right now, I definitely feel like we're living through like a renaissance of like music, because there's so much good stuff, man.
Big facts.
The younger cats that are doing it right now, like, I'm lucky enough to know some of them, and I tell them, you know what I mean? I'm just like, yo, like y'all raising the bar, and that forces me to stay sharp and to keep trying to grow as well. And I love that. You know what I mean? Like that was an actual text that I sent to Fatboy Sharif, who
I was about to say, shout out to Sharif, friend of the show.
his listened to his like his discography like on a plane ride home like from Chicago. And like I had to message him as soon as I landed. I was just like, yo, I was like, everything you're doing is beautiful, man. Like, it's like, I was just like, keep doing what you're doing. And yeah, I just had him over at the studio. Like I had met him a couple times at a record shop here in town, Arawax. A shout out to Arawax Records. You know what I mean? 11th Street, Union City, New Jersey. Check him out. But yeah, I mean, like I met him a couple times, seen him rock a couple times. And I was always like, yo, very highly impressed what he was doing. But listening to the records and like just the way he works and like the wordplay, his flows, the voice, all of that, the choice of beats, the producers he works with, I was like, man, I'm like, yeah, you doing your own thing, man, and I love it. I love it so much. And like all, like I said, like that stuff makes me proud. Like he'll tell me, you know, yo, you the OG, man. And it's like, I appreciate all that. I really do. And you know what I mean? Like that shit definitely humbles me, man. But end of the day, all the music is built on everything that came before it. So it, like for me just to be a part of it, and to, if anyone has been influenced by us, like that's a beautiful thing, man. I feel like I've done my job. You know what I mean? But it's like, I also feel like it's like, I'm 46, but I feel nowhere near done. So it's like, I hear all this new stuff and it just makes like the wheels turn even more. It makes me want to create more. That hunger doesn't go away, man. Like I just, I love making music, and I love spitting rhymes, man. So I, you know, hearing it evolve, and like now that there's so many more people doing not the same thing, but just like in the sphere of like, it's like, I feel like we belong a lot more now than we did when we started. Like when we started, we were kind of like, not the only ones, but we were like a handful. It was like us, New Kingdom, Eddie Pop Consortium, Techno Animal. Yeah, you know I mean, like there was like, I'm sure I'm missing heads that are gonna be mad at me, but y'all get the idea. Like Mike Ladd was back doing stuff back then. Yeah, you know I mean, like there was a handful of us that were doing things. I feel like now it's a more comprehensive like world. You know what I mean, like where there's a lot more artists that are banging out like really dope experimental joints, and it's like so varied. You know what I mean? Like nothing really sounds the same. It's all kind of like in their own lanes that kind of branch off, which is beautiful to watch, man. Like
right,
I see an artist like War Mother, and I'm just like, I'm in awe. You know what I mean? Like it's like, man,
she's in her own field. Yeah. You know, like yeah. Shout out to War Mother. She's fucking amazing.
Word up. I just feel like all the music is there at our fingertips now. It's just a matter of like of looking and listening and searching for it. But it's amazing how much good stuff there is out there right now.
Right. Yeah. Like it's there. It's there is the main takeaway type shit. And you know, like for you, considering that you just kind of talked a little bit about the beginning before, I won't make you repeat the story, obviously, but like, but like, just because I'm curious, like, when did you first decide that you wanted to pursue music as more than just a hobby? Like, when did it become like, oh, I like this versus this is my life, I'm gonna do this?
It probably in high school, just because like when again, like I started as a DJ, so I was in a couple hip hop groups as a DJ early on, and that was cool. And then at one point, I was in a group that had like two DJs, and then one of the DJs, oh, no, I'm sorry, one of the MCs left, and the other MC was like, "Yo, you ever think about rhyming?" And at that point, I loved hip hop, I loved like you know MCs, but I wasn't an MC. You know what I mean? And I was like, nah, I never really thought about it. He was like, yo, he's like, you should try it, B. He's like, you got a dope voice. And I was like, so I started writing these little rhymes. They were fucking awful. You know what I mean? I was terrible, terrible, terrible rhymes. But you got to start somewhere, you know? And
Right.
I just, you know, I did fall in love with it and, you know, just kept writing and, you know, kept evolving and it, you know, became my passion and what I really wanted to do. And it was probably like early in high school when I knew like this is what I wanted, because like you know I had like the you know I don't at that point it wasn't even really much of a studio, man, but it was you know I had a little bit of gear in my house. I had like the turntables. Then I think it was probably when I met DJ Rec that really things started happening, because I remember like I met him. I remember I thought I was a dope DJ at this point. I was already rhyming and I was doing like this party. It was at the temple, the spot that used to, it was like a hall that you could rent out in Belleville. And I remember I was DJing and this kid came up, was like, yo, you mind if I get on the turntables? And I was all cocky. I was like, yeah, go ahead, man. And he got on and I was like, oh shit, I don't know how to DJ, because this kid like was incredible. And me and him hit it off. And then I never really DJed again, you know what I mean? Like I would like, from that moment on, I became a selector. I would just play records, but I realized that I wasn't really a DJ. I was like, yo, this kid is a DJ. But that was DJ Rec. And I remember, you know, he was making beats like on like a Lisi's like 16. And I was asking him, I was like, yo, you know, I got this group. At that point, like, you know, it was me and this other MC. And I was asking him, I was like, yo, it was like I was like, you know, you want to be our DJ and, you know, make beats for us. But I didn't really know like much about like the production side of things at that point. He was like, well, I would need to get better gear. And I was like, what do you need? And he was like, I need an SP12. He's like, I know a dude that's selling one for $500. And I was like, all right. I was like, let's get it. Fuck it. And back then, man, $500 was like more money than I didn't know. Like, I
Ever
didn't.
like
I didn't know where the fuck I was gonna get the money, but I was like, fuck it. So I bought this shit for him to have at his crib to make beats for us. And I, 'cause I didn't really know how to use the thing. It's actually right here. It's this one. Like, but like, so I, it was at his crib and I would go to his crib and like, he would make beats. And slowly, like I would start like asking him, like, you know, like, oh, you know, like how does this work? And that, so he showed me how to use it. After that, we ended up getting this one right here, the S900. And then the S950, and that, you know, he started showing me how to use all those joints, but he was the producer. Like I was at that point, I was just rhyming, and then basically, at one point, like, you know, like I guess by the time I was like a senior in high school, like I knew that I was like, you know, yeah, I'm gonna go to college, but I'm gonna be a musician. Like that's, I just in my core, I knew that's what I wanted to be. I was going to college like for the sense of gaining knowledge. Like I wanted to just know
Right.
more. I wanted to learn and I wanted to grow. That's not really the way colleges work in America. You know what I mean? Like
No.
I was thinking more like ancient Greece, like university. You know what I mean? Like gaining
Yeah.
wisdom and knowledge, and they don't really give a fuck about that. They were like, you don't have enough credits like for any degree right now. So like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I just want to learn. And they were like, nah, you're here to get a job. And I'm like, oh no. I was like, I'm not. I was like, I'm just here to learn and I'm gonna be a musician. And they were like,
Yeah, I
well,
already know what my job is.
Well, yo, for real, the crazy thing is, man, like I would never tell no kid to travel the path I traveled because it's insanity. But I went to school and the best thing I got out of it was that I met Octopus, I met Josh Booth, and I met Taxman, Angel Fernandez, who introduced me to the LabTechs, Oddity, Dev One, Complex. And that's like that was like the core of what I'm doing now. You know what I mean? Like without being there to meet those people, like my life wouldn't be what it is. And then what the decision I ended up making was it was gonna be my senior year. I took I had a grant to go there. I took the grant money and instead of paying my last year tuition, I bought an MPC 3000, which is right here. So I bought an MPC 3000, learned how to use that shit, started making beats, started like, you know, producing full on. And after I met Octopus at school, I, you know, he had a studio. I used to like bring the MPC to his studio and we would record there.
And them shits are not light, you know?
I got like a crazy messenger bag for it. I still got it somewhere. But that, you know, started working on stuff. Like when I started working with Octopus, you know, I was basically like a client at his studio and he liked what I was doing. And that's when we started building together. And that's when we start, you know, we kind of combined and became a group, like became a group and started working on what became Dialect. But yeah, you know, I mean, like without all those crazy steps in between, it's like, I guess like, I know it's like a rambling answer, but it's like, I guess like by the end of high school, I was definite that this is what I was going to do. But then like my sophomore year in college, right before I dropped out, that's like when I put all the chips in. You know what I mean? Like, that's when I was like, I missed a step. At that point, my crew from high school, like, fell apart. Like, so, like, and like that, my crew from high school was like, those were the only people I was chilling with. But like, my boy Rec moved to Florida. So I didn't have a producer. Yeah. Me and the other MC had a falling out. So, you know, no more group. And I was just kind of like, what the fuck am I going to do? And, I was, you know, it was basically like, I was like, well, if I really believe in myself and I really want to do this and I really think that music is what I'm going to do, I'm going to have to buy an MPC 3000 and I'm going to have to, you know, just make this shit happen. So I did it, you know, bought the sampler, dropped out of school, and here I am now. You know what I mean? Like, again, like I wouldn't recommend that to anyone. Any children's listening, don't be like, don't be like Uncle Dialect, because I could very easily be telling this story to myself laying in the gutter. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like being like thinking that I'm on a podcast, but actually just, you know, rambling out into the ether.
Y'all still saying elsewhere shit. Yeah.
No, I got an MPC. It's like, you ain't got an MPC, man. That's like an empty bottle of gin. Come on. But you know, in life, man, you gotta make choices. And you know, I wouldn't change any of the decisions that I've made, and the path has been it hasn't been easy, but right. I mean, it's been fulfilling, and you know, I've gotten to do what I love, man. And I've gotten to travel the world. I've gotten to make music with incredible musicians, and yeah, man, like I can't front, like I've loved every moment of it, even like the terrible moments, like sleeping on people's floors and, you know, traveling, playing for gas money, like all that bullshit. Yeah, man. But it's, you know, I wouldn't change a second of it, man. It's been dope. And again, it's like, you know, 46, and I really genuinely don't see myself stopping. You know what I mean? I just don't see, like, it's like, I feel like it's like, until I feel like the output isn't at the level that I require, I don't see why I would ever stop. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I feel you. And like, that's an incredible feeling to have, like to still just have that fire, like you were saying, especially considering how many different lives and different like iterations the Dialect journey has gone through. Cause of course, like, you know, I'm the, there's been a rotating cast of people in the group. And it's kind of been you who's been at the center of every single one of those iterations. You know, like it started out with Octopus and Josh and Rec. And then of course, Mike comes in. And like, there's like a whole bunch of different combinations. I'm not going to list them all, but like, yeah. You know, there's been a huge, like Dialect has been through a bunch of different forms over the course of these last years. So like being the one member who's been involved from the jump and really seen it all through the way you have. Like, what do you feel is most changed about what you would initially set out to do? And what are you surprised, let me rephrase that second part. What do you feel has changed the most? And what do you feel has stayed the same about you since you started?
Yeah, you know, I think even though there's been, like, you know, a lot of people involved in this, I think the group wouldn't be what it is without Octopus and without Josh. Like, I can't stress that enough. You know, I mean, and they know that. Like, they know how I feel about them, and they know, like, what they contributed and what, you know, Josh still contributes to this group. I think early on, I put a lot of responsibility in the hands of Octopus, which, you know, he handled wonderfully. But I don't want to say I was absent, but I was just kind of like, I just wanted to make music, and I didn't really give a shit about, like, all the other work that's required in a group in the background. You know what I mean? As far as, like, setting up tours and, like, the whole, like, business side of shit, I kind of just, like, left that on Oc. And, you know, he did a wonderful job, but I feel like that was my bad. You know what I mean? Like, I shouldn't have put all that on him like that. But, you know, yeah, I did like to, and still occasionally do like to get saucy as shit. So, yeah, I mean, I just felt like, but so did he, so I don't know why I thought that, like, it's like, oh, nah, you handle the business shit, I'm going to be over here drunk working on beats and rhymes. Like, that, it's stupid. Like, the work should have been equally split. But I, you know, he handled a lot of it. So since we've reformed, I've definitely taken more of, like, a central role in trying to handle a lot more aspects of not just the music, but just a lot of the behind the scenes things. But I mean, like, musically itself, I mean, like, I've always been involved with the music making process. I think people have a hard time wrapping their head around that, just because, I guess, because we're a hip hop group, so people think, like, a rapper is supposed to rap, and that's all that a rapper cares about. But that's not true. You know what I mean? It's like, the music was a partnership, like, between me, Octopus, and Josh in the beginning, and now between me, Mike, and Josh. And no one person is more or less important. It's just, you know, we work together and create what we create. I think this is all objective, but I feel like my contributions have grown as a musician the more experience I've gotten. You know what I mean? So it's like, the mixing of the albums used to be more of an Octopus thing back in the day, and obviously Octopus isn't in the group now, so the mixing thing as the group, actually, that was something that, like, I got more and more involved in while we were working on stuff. But I feel now, you know what I mean, like, it's like I'm very hands-on with mixing the album, but it's because I also, like, run my own studio now. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's a different thing. It's like, I have more experience mixing other people's albums. I have more experience, like, you know, just in music in general, just because, you know, the nature of being a musician for this long. So I guess I just wear more hats now, and I'm just kind of more involved in a lot of the aspects that maybe I wasn't so involved with earlier on. But I mean, like, the overall, like, ethos of the band has stayed the same, and, like, that, I think that's the that was like, kind of like, the what I wanted to see if it could be accomplished when I restarted the group. You know what I mean? Because, like, me and Octo did it for, like, 15 years. And, like, people ask, you know, like, what happened? And again, it's like, there's no behind the music scene. You know what I mean? Like, where there was, like, drama. There really wasn't. It was, like, basically me and him had been touring for 15 years, pretty much nonstop. And it got to the point where we were both just tired, man. And the conversation was very simple. It was just like, he was like, yo, I think this is it for me. And I was like, yeah, I was like, I could feel it. And he was living in Berlin at the time. So, like, we were playing a show in Switzerland at that point. And then we just decided to, you know, we were like, all right, we'll just go on hiatus. It was never like, you know, the band's breaking up. It was just like,
right, yeah. You needed a break.
Yeah, so let's not do this for a while. He wanted to work on different things. I had other things I wanted to work on. So, like, he started working on MRC Rhythms, started working on Background Audio, like two of his projects, yeah. Started working with a slew of other artists. I started doing Iconoclast, which was like my, like stripped down. In my mind, it was like my boom bap project, but now I realize how silly that is because pretty much everything I do is like gonna be skewed no matter what. So it was my attempt at more stripped down boom bap hip hop, but it is what it is. But like while I was, you know, so it wasn't really like a hiatus, like I was at home. Like I started working on those projects, started touring again, and being on those Iconoclast tours, I started like, you know, I wanted there to be a separation from the dialect thing because I didn't want people to expect what we were doing, like what we did as dialect. So, you know, it was like starting over as far as like playing smaller venues and, you know, but the people that were coming out, some of them were dialect fans. And, you know, so then like for the encores, we would like play a couple dialect joints. And what I found was that not only were the people really feeling it, but like I realized how much I missed it. And I came home, you know, was chilling with Octopus and like told him, I was like, yo, you know, I'm thinking about restarting this. And I got it. Like, you know, in his head, like he was like, yo, I'm kind of like, he had moved on. He was like on a different path. He was doing different stuff. And he was like, his heart wasn't in it, but he could see that, you know, I really wanted to do it. So I think, you know, it was that understanding where I basically told him like, yo, you know, I'm not going to do no bullshit. Like I'm not, my whole thing is I was never going to do anything that was going to tarnish what we had built. So when I restarted it and I brought Manteca in as the co-producer, I brought Rec in again, just cause I kind of like, I wanted him to see some of the good times. Cause like Rec was in the group when we were straight up like struggling, like, you know, playing VFW hall, sleeping on floors. So I wanted him to like, you know, experience playing like an actual like dope venue with an ill sound system. I wanted him to experience, you know, like actually, yo, nah, you actually get your own hotel room. Like you're not sleeping on the floor tonight. You know what I mean? Like that kind of shit. Like, nice. I want you to feel this, man. Cause you know, like he went through the early struggles. So it was nice to bring him in to actually experience some of the good shit. But when we were restarting, you know, my whole concern was like, all right, like playing old dialect songs is one thing, but are we going to be able to write new shit? Like, and then is the stuff that we're going to write, is it going to be this, you know, at least at the quality that we were at? But I wanted to push further. Like I want to see like how we can expand and like, you know, make, you know, have it be dialect sound, but have it be, you know, brand new at the same time. And all that concern kind of got like laid to rest when me and Mike did Mass Laughter on Asphalt for Eden. Like Mass Laughter was a song when we worked on that one and it came out the way it did, I was like, okay. I was like, we good. I was like, we can do this. And it's kind of been like from there, it was just like, that was the jump off point. And it's just been growing again, kind of in a similar way as it did the first time around, like where each album is kind of like building on the last, but kind of like moving into like new and different directions. So like Precipice right now is like Precipice is my favorite record. I'll probably hate it in about a week. And probably, you know, like I'm already like thinking and working on the next joint. But I'm definitely proud of like where we're at as a group and where we're at musically.
You know, like as you should be, because I think there aren't very many groups either. Like there aren't very many like acts, like not even just groups, but like acts, like whether it's in the mainstream or the independent scene, whatever. Like there aren't very many people who get that chance to kind of like take a bit of time off and like come back and kind of have like a really meaningful second wind in a sense, because like you're saying, like you know like from Asphalt for Eden, this has been, you know, like you've been building it up. I love how you put that, you've been building this back up kind of like from the ground up again, you know, like on like a slightly different level. And you know, you mentioned this earlier, like way earlier, and the music that y'all make is often called like dystopian because like it very much sounds like it. But I also love the fact that you really or actually like dystopian as much for content as it is for like the sound of everything. But like, I love that you really honed in on like the glimmers of hope that are in there, because like, that's kind of like, it feels like the main thrust of dialect is like, things don't have to be like this, you know, like things are, but they don't have to be like this forever. And like, I'm just, you know, you know, like you're almost like, it's almost like the music is just like a guide through the bullshit with just like, hey, like, yeah, like Yeah, like society is treating marginalized people terribly. The economy is in the shitter. People don't care, but this is not the end, you know? And like that's one of the things I love about this new record. It's what I love about From Filthy Tongue of Gods and Griots, which is probably my favorite thing y'all have ever done if I had to pick one. And just like there's just these little, you know, like using that knowledge that you talked about before to kind of contextualize what's happening, but not be stuck in it, if that makes sense. Like, that's kind of how I've always seen your music. 100%. So, you know.
Doing so many interviews, I love like when I get questions that actually do challenge me. And I got one the other day that it challenged me, but like in a way where I wasn't expecting the answer that I gave, but the answer is actually probably one of the best answers I've ever given. Cause they were asking what are the moods? I have it in front of me cause I didn't want it to reference it, but they were asking what are the feelings or the moods that inspire me when I compose my music? They were like, is anger the main one? And I was like, nah, I was like, love is. I was like, it's love for the people that don't have a voice. It's love for the downtrodden. It's love for the people that are cast aside. It's love for the people that got to go through all this bullshit in life. It's love for my people and for my culture, for my family. You know what I mean? I ended the answers by saying, I was like, yo, these are love songs, B. It's like my music is about the struggle. It's not defeatist. You know what I mean? My music is about fighting all this bullshit. You know what I mean? Like my music is for the people that are fighting this shit, to let them know that, yo, I'm with y'all. You know what I mean? Like, we're here. Like, we're in this shit together. Like, that's what it's about. It's not about like, oh yeah, the world's fucked up. You know, everyone's trying to kill us. Good night. If that's the point, then why the fuck are we even breathing? Nah, like, my shit is about like, yo, let's rise the fuck up and change this shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
But also, you know, and also keeping an eye on like what has happened historically, because like we need to, like, shit that's happened shouldn't be forgotten. It shouldn't be brushed under the rug. That shit needs to be yelled from rooftops to always be remembered. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? So like, that shit doesn't happen again. You know what I mean? Like, that's the shit. Like, we have to learn from our history, not try to forget our past. Like, fuck that. You know what
right,
I mean?
Absolutely.
When we're writing, when not just we, but like when the younger generations are writing the new chapters, I want them to have the blueprints of what pitfalls not to fall into. You know what I mean? So like that, for real, man. Like, I didn't realize it until I gave that angry answer to that interview. But it's like, yo, these are love songs, B. I'm gonna use that shit from now on. I honestly feel that I write love songs. I write love songs for our people and for our culture. That's what I do. You know what I mean?
Right. You know, and you know, like the fact that you've and like that hasn't changed. Like, you've been doing that from the jump, you know, like I gotta emphasize that. Like, this has been the ethos, this has been the mission. And the fact that you've kept at it the way you have. You know, like, even as things have gotten worse in a lot of ways, like, it's still there. And like that sense of resilience is like inspiring on like a surface level, but also just like, it's just that shit really just like matters, you know, like it's something that I think about more as I get older. And you know, for people who are listening and who may not know, I write at Pitchfork. I'm a contributing editor over there, and just like being in a position to kind of like put on for stuff like this from everybody, you know, like I feel I can tell, like, speaking for myself personally, I feel like a responsibility to just like put on for people who are doing good work and speaking truth to power. And it was amazing for me, like, having discovered y'all in college, to really be in a position to be like, hey, I can write about a dialect song on Pitchfork. Like, that's pretty nuts, you know? So yeah. Like, I one of my best friends, Corey, shout out to Corey, who actually put me on to y'all. Like, just like to see you still doing this the way you do is just really heartwarming to me. And like really listening to Precipice, like, and the thing I love about this new record is that like, it feels so warm, like musically, it feels so warm compared to almost everything else you've done. Like that three track run from like Decimation to Good to, I think, Holistic. Like that three song run, just like it feels like I had it written down. I don't want to fuck it up. Like they have this like humid, sticky quality to them that feels different from something like Asphalt for Eden or like or like Filthy Tongue, which to me is like the perfect winter album. Like Filthy Tongue is like it's brick outside. Like I'm on the train, I'm about to get off in my fucking down goose jacket, and I gotta go brave the cold, and I throw on From Molehills, you know.
That was definitely like, yeah, that was like, that was my, yo, it's a cold world vibe.
Yeah.
but yeah, man, I'm glad you picked up on that. It's funny, like the aesthetic of Precipice, it's funny because it's not just the technical side, but I think that's where like the whole sound kind of like where it grew from, is that I was just really in love with tape saturation and like, it's all over the album. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like everything is run through a four track. There's like a lot of like, you know, warbliness to like certain sounds and this like heavy, like low end, even on sounds that aren't necessarily low end. It just has like that density of especially like cassette, you know what I mean? Like of that type of recording. So it's like this kind of like muffled feel to it, but like we only did it on certain sounds, so then other sounds are like sound even brighter on the record. But it definitely gives it like this like kind of warm, like you said, like that humid feel to it. But yeah, it's I think the warmness of it kind of like also like translates to the lyrics, you know what I mean? Like the
definitely.
Like what I'm speaking on and how I'm doing it. Yeah, like a joints like Holistic to me and Good are just so like, it's funny, like I like Holistic and Good, like I went into Iconoclast trying to do a boom bap record, but I feel like Holistic and Good might be my most boom bap songs, and they're on a Dialect record, so
I'd agree with that. Yeah.
I'm doing everything ass backwards, but yeah, I mean, like, it's yeah, man, you know, I keep saying what I'm saying because that's what's happening in the world and that's what's going on around me, but I feel like I get more and more hopeful, and I know like things seem like they're worse, but see, man, like I feel like I've, you know, like I'm just coming to a place in my life where you start realizing it's like, yo, the world has always been on fire.
Mm-hmm.
But, and like, as humans and as, you know, just within humans, like our people, we always find a way through, you know what I mean? We always have, like, throughout history. So I'm not like, there used to be like, when I was younger, I think there was more of like this like fear in the records. And there was like this, there's always anger, but there was like this anger and this fear about like what could happen. And I'm not saying that isn't still there, but I feel like there's less of it now because I know we're going to make it through. You know what I mean? Like, and especially like, yo, in the midst of this fucking pandemic, B, like, I remember like when all that crazy shit was happening with George Floyd and like the, you know, like the, it's all like fucking police murders, all that bullshit, man. And like yeah. People were rising up. And like there was like protests and there was marches. I remember me and my wife were part of like one of the marches that was here in Union City. And yo, like we in this march and it was like, you know, a few hundred people and ends at this park. And like most of the people were kids, man. And the people that organized it were high school kids. And they spoke at this park. And I was like, damn, man, like these kids were like 15, 16 years old. And I was like, I was not that eloquent. I was not that well informed. I was not that aware as these kids were at that age. And I told them as such afterwards. I spoke to them and I was just like, yo, I just want y'all to know, man, like y'all really give me hope because I see these kids talking and I'm like, yo, I'm like, okay. I'm like, maybe, you know, my generation gave it a shot and it didn't quite work out the way we thought it would. But maybe these next kids, when they get their shot, I feel like, I don't know, like I'm optimistic for it. I'm not saying the next generation is perfect. No one's perfect. I know that. You know what I mean? Like, it's evident with the shit that just happened in Buffalo. That kid was 18, so there's always pieces of shit. Don't get me wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But beyond that, I just feel that, like, in speaking with a lot of kids, regardless of race or, you know, anything, the younger generation, for the most part, I'm not going to say all, of course, because, again, what I just stated, but for the most part, I feel like things that mattered to my generation don't matter as much to the younger generation as far as things like race or sexual orientation or, you know, like all these hangups that people of my generation still had I feel like the younger generation, it's getting less like prominent. You know what I mean? So that's hard. That makes me feel good, because I feel like, wow, maybe there is a way through all this bullshit. You know what I mean? I just hope that when their turn comes and I'm older than I already am now, that I'll have the wherewithal to know to step aside, unlike the baby boomers right now who just don't, don't, you know what I mean? Because I think like that's where a lot of our problems in this country comes from, is like this, I guess it's ego. I guess it's like thinking that you know better than anyone else and wanting to, you know, hold on to power for as long as you possibly can. I just hope that I could, at that point in my life, I could be an ally, step aside and help the younger generation achieve the shit that we couldn't. You know what I mean?
Man, and see, that's such a beautiful sentiment to me, because like, you know, just like bridging generational gaps is something that's really important to me in music, in politics, in just life in general, you know, like especially after we've all come out of the pandemic, you know, like I feel like, you know, there was I forget who it was, but I was watching an interview that Earl Sweatshirt did back when some rap songs came out. And he mentioned that for so many people, Trayvon Martin's death was this like, that was like the catalyst for people of like my generation to like really start to look into everything that's been happening. You know, like I'm fortunate enough to have kind of had some sort of consciousness going on before that, but like it was definitely an animating moment for a lot of people. And I'm sure you specifically also have like an animating moment that was like, all right, I'm in this now, like I'm really here and like actively involved and want to fight the shit. So to like see you, so just to see you like in music and otherwise just really wanting to like bridge that gap and just be open is great. You know, like that's like we really couldn't, well, yeah, like I mean, like we could probably ask more of everyone, but like it's just always, I'm just always very I just always pay attention to people who are like really trying to be like, yo, like I'm here to like actually make this better. And like it's crazy you mentioned that bit about seeing the protests, because I can feel that in Decimation. Like at the very like at the very end of that song, like that's you talking to the kids. You know, like that's you being like, you know, like the history of streets will not be censored. Like we hear you, like this has happened before, it's gonna happen again, but we're gonna be here and we're gonna do this. You know, like it's, yeah, like it's I'm not sure if you've heard anything about, I've been talking about this a lot, I gotta stop, but I'm sure you've heard a bit about the movie Everything Everywhere All at Once at this point, right?
I haven't seen it yet, man. So okay. Please don't ruin anything. That's definitely on the list of ones that I have to peep. So
gotcha,
like,
yeah.
I may do that like in the next couple of days, man, for real.
Yeah, you oughta.
Everything I'm hearing is like, you know, like it's wonderful. So yeah, I gotta peep that, absolutely.
So the reason I bring that up is because I'm not going to spoil anything in the movie, but the movie itself is very much like, it's about nihilism and just like the debate of, or not even the debate, but just like the different practical applications of nihilism, like what it means to be like a nihilist, like nothing matters, so fuck it all, goodbye, like you were saying before, versus nothing matters, so let's cherish what we can. Wow. Like and you know, like that, and like you're on that other side, like you're on the let's cherish and figure this out while we can side. And I'd be really interested to hear what you thought about Everything Everywhere All at Once when you peep, because like it's like it doesn't really struggle with that so much on a political level, but it's definitely there just in terms of like, definitely in terms of sexual orientation and gender identity and just like, I just think that's a conversation that I've been waiting for culture in general to kind of have for a long time. So to see it kind of projected in a movie like that, and to see it continually come through your music, is just like, that gives me hope, you know, like that gives me energy. And I'm like on top of all of that, I just think the music sounds great. Tell me about the documentary that y'all scored that's on HBO Max now, because like, wow, like what a thing to say, yeah, that you did, like
yeah, like we're super proud of that, man. Like Mike Manteca, like he was like a dude that he knows, a director who's working on this project, who I guess, you know, fan of dialect as well, and like contacted us about scoring the documentary. I'm really proud of how it turned out. It's probably like one of the most difficult things that I've ever worked on, because, you know, scoring a film, you have to, you know, I'm sitting there watching this footage. I must have watched that documentary like, I don't know, 100 times, you know what I mean? And watching that footage that many times, man, like I was saying, I could only work on it for like a couple hours at a time. I would have to like physically leave the studio and go for a walk just to feel sunshine on my face and remember that there are some good things in this world, because that shit is bleak, man. And that's, you know, what it's Betrayal at Attica, you know, like what you can't even call it riots, man. It was a fucking massacre in a prison.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it didn't have to happen. And like this footage was like stuff that the state had said was lost. But one of the lawyers for the Attica brothers had all this like film footage, archival information, files. And she is interviewed extensively in the documentary, and she left all this footage to the director. So while we were scoring it, it was kind of like this ongoing thing where he wasn't sure if it was going to come out, because there was like legal action threatened against him by the state. And it's also crazy to me, man, because like, you know, that happened in, I think it was like the early 70s.
Yeah, 71.
Yeah. Early 70s. So you're talking about, you know, decades removed, and like they're still trying to bury that shit. You know what I mean? It's just, it's crazy to me. Like most of the people that were involved in that are all gone now. But, you know, I guess they don't, you know, they don't want like that kind of truth coming out. But again, man, it's like, you know, scoring it was heart-wrenching, man. Just having to like watch those images over and over again. It was tough to work on, but fulfilling to be a part of it and to be part of something that important, man.
Right.
So I guess that's probably the first documentary that we scored. We've scored a few films prior to that. We worked with director Srithar Reddy for this film Lilith. Me and Octopus scored that, and then I did. He did a short film called 12 Angry Women. I scored that for him. And actually, he commissioned a dialect song basically that was supposed to be part of that film. It ended up being like, it was going to be just like for the trailer and for he was going to do a soundtrack. I don't think he ever got distribution for that, so I don't know if it ever came out, but it was Police State is Nervous is the name of the song. I think it's up on YouTube. You could probably find it. He did like a short video for it too, but so we've always, you know, that's something that we've had our hand in for a while, like wanting to score films. It's just a difficult world to break into, but doing this documentary, I hope will open more doors, because you know, something you said earlier, how you know, like when you listen to our music, like it paints pictures. That's something that we've always been kind of aware of, like the cinematic nature of the albums. So we always felt like what we do would translate really well to film scoring. So that's something, you know, like that definitely want to, like, you know, continue and pursue. Obviously, I mean, like what the kind of music we make doesn't, you know, it won't fit in every movie, but there's, right, you know, like it has to be a director that understands like what our sound is and, you know, how it works. But I think there's definitely an avenue for that, you know?
Right, definitely. And yeah, like one quick little follow up, like what's really like, you know, you know, like for you and Manteca and everybody else, like what's like the biggest difference between like working on a dialect project and making a score for a movie? Because like those two things are not the same.
Yeah,
really.
Not at all. Like, I mean, like really it's the it boils down to the autonomy and the vision, you know what I mean? Because like when it's the dialect project, it's about how we want it to be and what we're trying to say. Scoring a film, at the end of the day, it's what the director is trying to say and what the director is trying to convey, you know what I mean? Like the emotions that he wants for scenes. So it's a lot like with scoring a film, there's a lot of back and forth, like where, you know, we try something, send it to the director, and he'll send back notes, and either we'll change the whole piece, or, you know, we'll adapt it to what like what how the director's seeing it, he or she is seeing it. But it's you know, like you got to swallow your pride, you got to swallow your ego, you know what I mean, because it's not about you, it's about their vision and their film. And I don't think, you know, like I didn't really think of that when we first started doing it, but you know, that's you learned that it, like you said, it's a very different thing. It's not, because you're not working on your own, it's your music, but it's not your project, and it's not your vision, you know what I mean? Like you're being paid to create sonics for of someone else's visual and like someone else's story. And it's also difficult because, you know, not every director, but I feel some directors, you know, the language they speak is visual. And as a musician, the language we speak is, you know, sonic. So sometimes there's like a communication issue, like where you have to like try to figure out what it is exactly that the director is looking for like sonically, you know what I mean? So there's like, right, you got to learn how to communicate with the director, and then you kind of move from there. But for the most part, we've had great relationships with the directors we worked with, and it's been dope. It's just been a different thing than working on an album, you know?
Right. And, you know, like hopefully more to come. Like I'd be excited to hear y'all. I'd be excited to hear y'all score like a sci-fi movie or something. Like that's something like a dialect scored like science fiction movie would go stupid. I need that in my life.
I would love that. My only hesitation is that we already get compared to the Daleks from Doctor Who.
So oh much. Yeah, right. Okay.
If we scored a science fiction film, it'd be over. That'd be all. We'd be the Daleks then.
That's fair. But just like even anything, just like like a coming of age teenage drama scored by dialect, that'd be fucking nuts. I don't know.
Any directors out there, hit me up. You know what I mean? Like we're ready to work, man. I genuinely do love working on that kind of thing, just because it is challenging, but it's like a different, it's just a different different avenue, a different way to work. Another, like in a similar vein, I started scoring a couple podcasts, which a friend of mine, like my boy Jesse Cannon, shout out Jesse Cannon, put me on to a couple joints that I've been working with. I can't really say much more than that, but working on a podcast is a similar thing, because it's like, you know, the stories that they're telling, they want the music that helps convey that story. So it's, you know, I try things out and then I send it to them. And if they're feeling it, we move with it. If they're not feeling it, I change it and try again. You know what I mean? So it's like an audio movie in that sense. So it's like, right, it's the same thing. It's like, it's not like working on an album. It's a different experience, but I enjoy it because it is a challenge and it's, you know, a different way to express yourself musically. So it's, you know, it's definitely dope.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I went through a similar process with my homegirl J Words, who made the theme song for this podcast. She's also from the Union City area in Jersey. Shout out to Jen. Jen's amazing. I love swampy music like this. You know, like I came up on people who were, you know, like cribbing from your DNA, like fucking, you know, like Rat King and fucking Death Grips and like stuff like that. You know, like it's, you got a lot of sons out here. I know you know that already, but like, you know, sometimes it has to be said. Like, so
it's weird, man. Yeah. I'm not denying that. It's just like it's weird. You know what I mean? I keep going back to that word, man. It's humbling. You know what I mean? But it's like to me, I don't know. Like I just feel like that's the nature of music. Like music has to be built on other things that you hear. It's influenced by other things you hear. That's inevitable. That's right. That's the way every musician gets into music. Like no one's ever like, yo, like I'm gonna create like this brand new thing. You know what I mean? It's like everything is related to something else. So all the stuff that's been coming out, I love it, man. I'm not familiar with Rat King. I gotta peep that. But like Death Grips, like yeah, like I like when I heard that, man, like ex-military, I was like, holy shit, this is dope.
Yeah, right. Like
what I don't get is like when people say it in a negative way, when people are like, oh, like without y'all, like they wouldn't be here. And I'm like, yeah, but who cares? They are here. You know what I mean? Right. And what they created is dope as shit. And also is a thousand times more popular than we are. And their popularity just makes it better for us. You know what I mean? It's like, I guess people expect like jealousy or hatred, but I honestly don't. Like, I don't see it that way. I see it as if they are in fact derived from us, then that's wonderful, man. Like, that's more ears for us. You know what I mean? Like, this is a sound that I really love. And it's like, if it's going to grow and it's going to, you know, take on like new personalities and like, you know, evolve into different things. Like, what's wrong with that, man? That's a beautiful thing. Like, I love it.
Absolutely.
Man.
Yeah. No, like, and like, that's history, you know, like that's the thing. Like, y'all are like all a part of a lattice work, and it's not like, you know, like I appreciate that there's like no bitterness there, because like, that's, I just like, to me, it's just so important. I think there's a difference between being bitter about other people exhibiting parts of your DNA and just like acknowledging the fact that there's history to that, you know, and just like kind of just like charting the path, you know, as a journalist and a writer and a critic, and I guess a podcaster, I kind of feel a responsibility to help tell that story and chart those paths.
I definitely appreciate that, because I guess there is, because you have groups like, you know, like Death Grips, like Clipping, that are, you know, just objectively more popular. You always get, you get the people who, like, when they do hear dialect, they're like, oh, they're just trying to be like Death Grips. And I'm kind of like, well, that now,
just hold on a second.
You know the history of it, you know, that's absolutely not true. You know what I mean? So like that side of it, I do appreciate it. Cause like, yeah, like people, you know, there are a lot of people who don't know who we are, and educating them and like having them like, you know, find this stuff. I love that, man. I love that, like, the younger kids that are discovering us now, you know what I mean? Cause it's like that, like, not knowing about a band, that's no one's fault, man. Like, you're going to discover bands when you discover them. Like, I didn't learn about Silver Apples till they were, you know what I mean? Like, weren't even really playing anymore until, like, you know, they had a resurgence. But it's like, same thing with This Heat. I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, I was up on This Heat in the 80s. No, I wasn't. You know what I mean? I was not. Like, I learned about them much later and was completely blown away by the fact that those records came out when they came out. You know what I mean? I was like, yo, Silver Apples came out like in the fucking 70s. You know what I mean? Like, in New York. And it was basically like breakbeats with like synthesizing noise on top of it, and some dude like singing these weird ass lyrics. I'm like, yo, like, how were they doing this at that time? You know what I mean? I think that's amazing. Like, you listen to Faust, they have a song from like on the BBC from like, I think it's like from 1973. And the title of it is just like January. It's like the numbers. It's like January, like whatever, 7/7/73. And you listen to it and it sounds like every trip hop record I've ever heard. And then it kind of bleeds into like shoegaze. And then it's like, yeah. I'm like, yo, like, y'all just covered like my whole discography, you know what I mean? On one jam that you did on the BBC in 1973 before I was even born. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, and I didn't hear that particular recording so much later. So it's like, it's no one's fault that, you know, the people who haven't heard dialect, it's not their fault they haven't discovered it. But it's like, and when they do, I'm happy that they do. You know what I mean? Like, even if it is like 25 years in, even if it's 100 years from now, you know what I mean? Like, and people gonna be like, oh shit, like, this record came out when? How the fuck was that? Like, how were they doing that then? Like, why would they even think of doing it? That to me is an honor, man. To be that kind of band. If I could be, you know what I mean, if I'm a This Heat, if I'm a Silver Apples, I'm cool with that too. You know what I mean? Like, we had the you know, the pleasure of collaborating with Faust. And I remember being in the studio with Joachim, and you know, I love Faust, man. They're musical geniuses. And I remember at one point, like, we're in the studio chilling and, you know, drinking a bottle of wine and shit, and he's like, he turns to me and Octo and he's like, dialect is just like Faust. And I was just like, what? You know what I mean? To say that, I was just like, oh shit. I was like, that's the pinnacle. He's like, you will never make any money. He starts laughing and I'm like, oh, I'm like, yeah, he was right. But you know what I mean? But still, I'll take the comparison on both angles. You know what I mean? Like, if we're a Faust, so be it. You know what I mean? I think that's a beautiful thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, facts. Like, that's like, like once again, it's really just like a history thing, and just like seeing like where you fit in that, like, that's priceless, you know. Like, you said it like off camera earlier, just like it just kind of comes down to like the gratitude to like being around and like contributing to society in like a good positive way. And once again, just like the music's good, man. Like, you don't need me to tell you that, but like, you know, but no, of course, like, you know, like I'm, you know, like I'm a fan, and you know, like it's really been, I have one more question for you, but like, it's been like just before that, it's just like, it's been a real pleasure to just like sit here and talk with you about all this stuff, and just like, just to like really just like thank you. You know, like I just really I appreciate your perspective a lot. I really do.
Honestly, man, I really appreciate it. Look, any musician will tell you this, man. Like I feel lucky that 25 years in, people still want to talk and still want to listen to what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Like you got to keep it in perspective, man. Like music fans, music critics, everyone's fickle. You know what I mean? Music is very subjective. So what's hot today or what you know, what's popping today is not popping tomorrow. So to do this at any level for 25 years, you know what I mean? Like I'm thankful, man. Like I'm happy to still be creating stuff that resonates. Like I always say as a musician, man, like all I can do is make a statement. You know what I mean? As an artist, I make a statement. Who it resonates with and what they make of it, that's not even, like I'm humbled that it does resonate with people, but I'm not in control of that. You know what I mean? All I can do is be as honest as I am, as I can be, and just release like the art that I truly believe in, and it'll resonate with who it's going to resonate with. And that's, you know, I've made a career of building a tribe of people that way, of finding the people it resonates with, and we just keep building. And I'm thankful for that, man. It's, you know, the crazy thing is that, like you saying that, you know, like the you did the review for the one joint on Pitchfork, and it's crazy to me when I think about it, because it's like Pitchfork was reviewing like a lot of our early stuff, but I also realized that like probably the whole staff of Pitchfork has turned over like 7 times at least.
Yeah,
you know? 25 years. So it's like whoever was writing for us at Pitchfork back then probably isn't even, I don't know where they are. You know what I mean? Like, it's like that's just the nature of this business too. You know what I mean? It's like the tastemakers, the gatekeepers, the bloggers, the critics, the reviewers, like that's all that, and the musicians, we're all a rotating cast of characters. So to stay here for 25 years, again, like I said, at any level is an accomplishment on its own. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like I feel the same way, and I've only been like I'm approaching a decade as a professional writer, and I feel the same way, you know, like just the fact that people care is it never stops feeling surreal to me that like I'm in a position. I don't want to make this too much about me, but it just feels like I'm just grateful to be in a position where I can contextualize incredible art and just kind of like talk about it and just like experience it. Like, forget contextualizing it, just like, you know, like y'all don't have to give us this shit, but you give it to us, and like you do it with all your heart, and I can tell that. And that's just, you know, just like thank you for that, you know.
But I think, you know, I think every, you know, for what we do, we also need the people that are going to yell it from the rooftops. You know what I mean? Because we're not a mainstream act, because we don't have, you know, my label does what it can, and I love the label I'm on. I love being on Ipecac, but it's not a major label. You know what I mean? Like, and I know that, but it's like without that heavy machinery behind us, we're still able to make some noise. And like, I don't lose sight of that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't lose sight of the fact that we have people that champion us and that are, you know, are out there telling people about us and what we have done and what we are doing. And like heads like you, you know, and it's also crazy to see like one of my people's John Morrison, you know, he's like,
shout
he's
out
like
to John.
Yeah, John's like writing for and like on NPR now. And I tell him, I'm like, yo, like if we like to pretend that we're public enemy, then you're our Harry Allen. You know what I mean? Because he's our media.
Ill reference.
Yeah, he's our media assassin. And I'm like, yo, I it's crazy to me that, you know, like we've infiltrated, like he's on NPR now. You know what I mean? So like he did a little thing. It wasn't just him, but it was like he was speaking on Precipice on NPR. And I was just like, man, like I, and the thing is, I know he's being 1,000% genuine, because he, like his integrity as a writer is, you know, on point, man. Like, it's like he's not doing it because, like, we boys. Like, if my album was trash, he wouldn't even be talking about it. You know what I mean? But
right,
because he was feeling it, he wanted to speak on it on that format. And I don't take that lightly, man. Like, for someone to put their name on an article or like on a piece that they speak in about my music, like, I appreciate that, man. Cause it's like, y'all, you know, like, y'all going to bat for us, and you're like I said, you're the handful of people we got are on top of the roofs, like, yelling this, and that's, we need more of that. You know what I mean? Like, on all venues, and not just us, but I mean, like, a collective us of underground artists that, like you said, we're putting our blood, sweat, and tears into this, man. And, like, you know, like, we need, like, everyone around us that believes in it to keep pushing too. You know what I mean? And also, you know, like, all the people out there that are copping this, man, like, I don't lose sight of that either. You know what I mean? Like, I know how hard it is to come about money, and to have people spending their money on my art. I don't take that shit lightly at all, man. Especially during the pandemic, when people were holding me down, buying, like, the meditation series.
Yeah, which, amazing, by the way. Like, that was, like, the fact that you put that together the way you did, the meditation series, was crazy. So congrats on that.
But from the bottom of my heart, man, like, I don't take that lightly, that people spent their money on that. You know what I mean? Like, and, like, all the stuff that we released, man. Like, I from the bottom of my heart, I'm thankful and grateful for people that you know, that believe in our music, and that our music resonates with them. Like, it's an amazing feeling, man. Like, you create this stuff. I've always said, like, I create this stuff for primarily selfish reasons, in that it keeps me sane and it lets me express all the things I need to express. But to see it, like, affect other people is so, it's amazing, man. Like, that is probably, like, one of the wildest aspects of doing this, is just, like, when, you know, when I meet people and, like, they tell me, like, how, you know, they'll, like, recite lyrics to me, or, like, tell me how important a certain song is to them, or, you know, heavy shit, like, where they're like, yo, your record got me through, like, really hard times, and, like, you know, shit like that. It's like, man, that shit, you can't, like, I can't express, like, how that feels, man. It really is amazing.
Yeah, truly. It's really full circle, and everyone's just here to help each other and to just kind of, like, have community with good people and just put on for good shit, you know, because, like, that's really the most important thing at the end of the day, is just, like, to help push each other forward however we can, whether that's through, you know, money or advice or, you know, criticism, depending on how it goes. But yeah, you know, I'm just, like, it's just, you know, like, you've stood the test of time, and that's not an easy thing to do, especially not as an independent artist. Like, that's power.
And so, I try to the best of my abilities, I try to pay it forward. You know, with the label that I have, like, Deadverse Recordings, man, like, that label just exists because I wanted to do what Mike Patton and Ipecac did for me. I wanted to do it at a much smaller level, but do what I could for artists that I believed in. You know what I mean? So right. being able to put out records that I really believe in, and, like, getting them a little bit of shine, you know what I mean? And just trying to help as any way I can, has been really fulfilling to me. And it just, you know, it really, it's something that I really want to continue doing, man. Like, putting out the Mars Kumari record was so dope. Like, I think that record is one of the illest that I've heard. The Jet Brando records, the Dilemma. I put out one of John Morrison's records. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like being able to do that kind of thing, man, like, it's just, you know, putting good art that you believe in out into the universe. Like, there's really nothing like that, man. Especially, like, you know, like, it's one thing to do it as an artist, but to do it as a label where it's like, it's just records that you believe in. It's not necessarily something like that. It's your music. It's just, you heard, you know, the stuff that I heard that I was just like, yo, this needs to be out there. And if I could help in any way doing that, I definitely want to do that, man. Cause, like, that's, you know, that's what Ipecac did for us, man. Like, yeah. without Patton and Greg, like, you know, behind us, like, we wouldn't be here. Like, that was by far, like, the best decision that that Octopus talked me into, was signing to Ipecac. Cause Mike knows this. I've said the story before, but Mike knows this. Like, I was like, when he asked to put the record out, I was kind of, like, lukewarm. I was like, ain't that white boy from MTV that was trying to rap, popping around in the video? And Octo was like, nah, man, we should do it with this label. He has a lot of good stuff. And I was just like, all right, I guess so. So I was definitely lukewarm, but I'm glad he talked me into it, man, because Mike, Greg, and them, like, they really changed our lives, man. So, wow. Yeah, I'm trying to be Ipecac for, you know, I'm no Mike Patton, but I'm trying to be Ipecac. Even though when I started the label, Greg's advice was don't start a label. But I'm not good at following instructions, so
right. That's hilarious though. You know, I didn't know that story about Mike Patton from before, but I fuck with Mr. Bungle, so shout out to Mike Patton. But that's funny as hell. That's funny as hell. You know, it all turned out great. But my very last question for you, so we could wrap this up, is if your life was a movie, what would it be about?
Oof. Man, I don't know. Probably it would be about carrying milk crates of vinyl. Like, just the entire movie would be just me just lifting crates of vinyl from one place to another. And there would be a scene where my mom would help me steal the milk crates, because that actually happened in my life.
Shout out to moms. That's amazing.
Mom Dukes had the minivan with the trunk open as, like, we ran up on this deli and, like, took like 20 milk crates and made the getaway. So shout outs to mom. I love you, mom. Thank you.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I love that. Wow. Like, that's, I mean, yeah. Like, what else do I say? That's so hard. but Will Dialect, thank you so much, man. Like, for taking the time and just, like, for continuing to do what you do, and really, like I said it before, but like, you really stayed the fucking course, you know, like, through a lot of shit. So like, the fact that you're still here and still active and still willing to grow, you know, as you're pushing 50, like, that's incredibly inspiring to me. So thank you for everything you do, for real.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you for having me. Thank you,
no, absolutely. Thanks for listening. Shout out to y'all for making it this far. And shout out to all the Black people listening too, because y'all really impeccable. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and tell a friend to come through next time. 1.